Good afternoon, and welcome to Ask Congress, program number 14. Our aim in this series of programs is to acquaint the citizens of our area with their representatives in Congress and to give them an opportunity to ask questions directly of their senators and their congressmen. Our citizen guests are residents of the area who have shown interest in their community and civic interest and represent the opinions of peoples in their area. At the conclusion of today's program, I'll tell you how you may have an opportunity to qualify to be a guest on successive presentations of this program. And now I'd like you to meet our congressional guest for today. He is Representative Frank J. Becker of the 3rd Congressional District in Nassau County, Long Island. Representative Becker, I think our audience might like to know something of your background. You're a Republican, born in Brooklyn, that's right?
That's right.
You are now living in Lynbrook.
Have for a great many years.
And Lynbrook is in the 3rd, as is, name me two or three of the communities.
Well, we go from Valley Stream, Rockwell Center, Freeport, including Lynbrook, Levittown, yes. Uniondale, East Meadow, all those communities and many, many more.
Sounds like we're calling stops on the southern end of the Long Island Railroad going out.
That's right, and they seem to be doing better.
Well, now let's see. You served in France and England during the First World War.
That's right.
You're a member of the Veterans of Foreign Wars, Knights of Columbus, Holy Name Society. You're married.
And the American Legion.
And the American Legion.
Oh, yes.
You have a family, sir?
Oh, yes. Married, 3 children and 7 grandchildren on both coasts.
Fine. Now your political career. You served 8 years in the New York State Assembly. You were elected to the 83rd Congress, re-elected to the 84th, and this 85th.
That's correct. Third term.
Third term. Your committee, sir?
Committee of the Public Works Committee of the House, and I have for 3 years been a delegate to the NATO Parliamentary Conference in France.
Well, then you would have been over in just before this NATO meeting in Paris.
That's right. We were there in session from the 11th to the 16th of November, prior to the meeting that President Eisenhower just returned from.
Of course. Very well. Well, now, as you know, a group of your constituents are here to ask you questions. I'll introduce them forthwith. Your first guest is Mr. Edmund B. Robbins of Wantagh, Long Island. He's been a resident of your 3rd Congressional District since 1951. He's married with 3 children. He's a builder of developments. Is that right?
That's correct, Mr. Graham.
In the Long Island area. You go right ahead and ask your congressman.
Congressman Becker, 2 years ago, 80% of all union members in Nassau and Suffolk County were employed in defense industry. Within the past year, there have been reports of between 9 and 20,000 layoffs in these industries. Whatever the count is, the figures are very disturbing because defense industry is the backbone of Long Island economy. My question to you, sir, is what is the government doing to assist in this situation, to alleviate the situation and bring us back these jobs and this income?
Well, if you just read the newspapers and the releases this week, the Defense Department has given a program to Republic Aviation that has put already some 500 back to work. Secondly, we're going into the area of electronics and atomic work. There are plants on Long Island that can use this type of work. That's being developed now. I met in Washington in October with the leaders of the unions, Emil Lindahl and Ostrov, Republic, and others, and we met with the Defense Department officials, and I believe that we're progressing. Of course, it's going to take time. You can't do that overnight. But I hope by the spring that much of that so-called type of unemployment will be alleviated.
I hope so, sir. My second question has to do with a major problem which exists on Long Island, namely that of taxes. As you know, some school districts are solving their tax situation by making industrial parks and by consolidating with other districts. Other districts find, on the other hand, that they are continuing to pay high taxes, and some districts will pay as they develop into this high district. Some of the areas are doing well, for example, Plainview and several others which have done their job. Now, my question to you is, can we expect more federal aid in Long Island in order that we can get a more realistic school tax rate throughout the area?
Well, I say you could if you want to pay more taxes.
Sorry?
In other words, you can't get federal aid without paying for it. There's no such thing as federal aid. The Treasury has no money except taxes that people pay into it. And after all, with New York is paying 22% of all the taxes going into the federal Treasury, we only get 8% back for all kinds of aid and costs of government. So now if you want to pay more money into the federal government, siphon off the greater part of it to other parts of the country, you'll get a little back. But it's going to be a question of tax. You can't get it without paying for it.
In other words, you feel that direct government aid in any event will result in no benefit to our area.
Well, only a benefit that you'll pay for. Only a benefit that you will pay for. Now, I put the greatest state aid bill for education through the state assembly, $50 million in 1 year. That helped all your districts out in that area. And I think the state can well do it again this coming year. Mm-hmm. Alleviate this condition.
You think state aid would be the
problem? Oh, I think state aid is the perfect answer.
May I interpolate there, Congressman? You don't think federal aid is the answer?
No, I do not. Because too much money is siphoned off in operation. Then you must have controls by the federal government. There are so many facets of that this federal aid situation that is works to the detriment, not to the good. There are states like Pennsylvania, they want, some of them are asking for federal aid only because they have a constitutional provision there of a debt limit. Wisconsin is asking for federal aid, but they have no state debt. Well, now, New York State, we have hundreds of millions and billions of state debt to support our schools, but now you want us to go in to spending more money for these states who don't want to have a debt.
That's the added fact that New York gets the bad end of the deal, as you say.
Oh, they siphon off 15% from us out of every dollar we only get back about 20% of all the money we pay in the federal government, any kind of aid.
Then wouldn't it seem more logical in equalizing the whole thing to get federal aid overall to each state?
Well, yes, if every state was paying an equal base that the New York State is paying. Mm-hmm. That's correct.
I'm afraid that's all the time we're going to have, Mr. Robbins. I know you had other questions,
you,
but at least we had a full chance to discuss those. We'll move along now to our second guest, Congressman, who is Mrs. Betty Rayner. Ms. Rayner has been a lifetime resident of the 3rd Congressional. Ms. Rayner is employed as a secretary and is a graduate of Long Island A&T. If you will, Ms. Rayner.
How do you do, Congressman Decker? For my first question,
what
I'd like
Long Island A&T?
Long Island Agricultural and Technical Institute.
Farmingdale.
Right. Farmingdale. Very good.
I'd like to ask you how effective our early warning radar screen is against aircraft, and what protection does this give us against an ICBM?
Against an ICBM? At the present time, I get into a very technical area there that in which I'm not an expert. I only read these things. As we have it today, it's supposed be about a 15-minute warning.
Distant early warning signal.
A distant early warning signal. Now against an ICBM that will travel at a much greater speed than any plane that is in the air today, the warning, of course, would be less. But it's my understanding, and I know factually, we are building these stations in areas where they'll be in line to give us a greater warning. In other words, we're building these radar screens at sea. We're building them up around the North Pole. We're building them in Iceland. We're building them in places where we'll have a greater time of warning. But 15 minutes, I would say, is about the maximum.
And how much protection will this give the people in the New York area?
Well, it's according to what kind of protection. I would say this, that with our Nike launching sites that we have built, and now before the Nike launching sites are completely equipped, many of them are equipped with the missiles or projectiles, we have gone to Nike Ajax, a Nike Hercules. Now the Nike Hercules is only in production when the scientists have come up with the Nike Zeus, Z-E-U-S-S. And this far surpasses either the Nike Ajax or Hercules, and is a missile that will pick out planes in the air and other types of missiles, and is built on a periphery along the coast in certain areas. We have one down at Lido Beach, you have one at Brookville, you have one on the North Shore, and so on along our coast. I think they've done a marvelous job with these Nike missiles, and they're changing. The scientists are producing them so much better all the time that the production can't really get rolling before they're into the next one. And it's costing the country a great deal of money, but we're willing to spend that kind of money.
I know you want to be as responsive as you could.
You want me to cut it short?
No, I don't. I don't at all, Mr. Congressman. Ms. Rayner really asked. She's asking for herself and her family and all the housewives and all of us. How much protection does this mean? Can you answer that question? You've spoken of the flexibility of the program to adapt to new models, but how much protection is it?
Well, Ben, I think that all our highest defense officials have said we must be realistic. They doubt that today there is any type of 100% security. In other words, with whatever type of security or defense screen we put up, there will be some missiles, and there will be some planes that are bound to get through. At the present time, there is no 100% security against planes or missiles getting through. That is true. I hope there will be in the foreseeable future, a type of screening, electronic type of screening, that will drop, intercept, and drop missiles or planes, attacking planes in the sea.
Detonate them by electronic beams.
By electronic beams, yes. I think that's going to come about. I at least say that prayerfully anyway.
Ms. Raina, I'm afraid that's all the time we'll have, but
thank
you very much for joining us. Well, I know you're so anxious to have another question. Do you want to go ahead with it? Is it a moot one, an important one? Go ahead.
I wanted to ask, how much was our national prestige damaged by our failure to get a satellite in the air on time?
Important question.
Oh, that is an important question. But you know, when you talk about our national prestige being damaged, you must realize this, that we have managed, and particularly in these past 4 or 5 years, to bring about certain Pacific countries with our NATO organization, a great area of interest who must live and stand together. Now, prestige-wise, after all, there are many countries of the world who look with envy upon the United States. And such a thing as a satellite is bound to affect our prestige. I feel quite certain that with our forces that we have, the money that we're spending, the money that we've agreed to put up, it's more talk than it is actual fact, because I've traveled through these countries and the people still like the United States of America, just as we do.
We'll move right along. Thanks, Ms. Raina. I'm glad you had a chance to ask that question. One quick question for me. Do you have a headquarters besides your house office in Washington?
Yes, Ben. I have an office in Lynbrook. I have a telephone there. It's listed in the telephone book. My home phone is in the book. I can make 32 round trips to Washington this year to be in my office, sometimes Thursday, Friday evenings, Saturday, and sometimes Sunday, seeing my constituents on every problem. They want to see me, and they can see me in Washington, but they never have to find it necessary to come there particularly.
Look you up in the Nassau phone book.
They look me up in the Nassau phone book. It's always there, and I'm always available.
Our third guest is Craig Scott, a senior at Mepham High School in North Belmore, Long Island. He's lived for 10 years in your district. He's president of the National Honor Society, vice president of the International Relations Club of his high school. Go ahead, Craig.
Hi, Craig.
How you doing, Congressman? I have a question with regard to foreign affairs. Yesterday, Nikita Khrushchev, in his speech before the Supreme Soviet, said that he was in favor of top-level talks between the United States and the Soviet Union with regard to discussing coexistence. Now, I wonder, are you in favor of talks of this nature at the present time?
No, I'm not. If you read the newspapers back through the years, they were in favor of them at Geneva, too, weren't they? As a matter of fact, the Russians were always in favor of talks. But I think first, before there's any top-level talk with President Eisenhower, that there should be talks amongst the diplomats as to just what they want to do in the way of disarmament, and not just the United States and Russia. And I don't believe our president should sit down with them, because the American people must recognize one fact, that Soviet Russia is determined to rule the world by conquest. And if you read Lenin's book, if you read the speeches they've made and the history of it, any dealings we have with them, we must deal with them with our tongue in the cheek. Does that answer your question?
Well, I wonder if you could clarify a little bit what you are in favor of in talking with the with Russia, if anything at all.
Well, I see no harm in our diplomats sitting down with, not alone with them, but with the diplomats of the other countries, and talk about President Eisenhower's disarmament plan, or somebody's disarmament plan that we could believe in, that we could inspect. If we would know what we're doing, we can trust it, but we can't trust their word. Any day we do, we've always lost, same as we did at Yalta, Tehran, Potsdam, Cairo, and all the other agreements we got into. We lost, and we put the free will behind the Iron Curtain by listening to them and those talks.
I see. I'd like to turn to the Middle East for a moment. Do you feel that President Eisenhower's Middle East doctrine has been successful so far in the light of, Russian infiltration into Syria and, say, other Arab nations?
I believe it has been very successful, because if you take the question of Syria going to attack Turkey just recently, and the fact that Turkey is also in a NATO alliance, we immediately let Syria know, of course, back with Russian arms, as Syria was, we let them know, if you attack Turkey, that is in the Middle East, we will defend. And we let all the countries in the Middle East know that. The same as we let Israel know. If anybody attacks Israel, we too will defend. I mean, we're all in that Middle East doctrine, and we subscribe to our people, I'm sure. realize that and know it.
Well, what about the future, sir? Do you think that this doctrine has the capacity to be successful in the future as well as it has been so far?
That's, of course, a question that I think God could only answer. Much of what is going on in the world today, Craig, is in the lap of Almighty God. I think maybe we did a lot more praying than speculating about the future. Things might come out better.
Thank you.
Go ahead. Your time for a quickie, Craig.
Well, I wonder if I could ask, with regard to the Hungarian Revolution that was crushed so by the Russians, do you think that there's any chance in the future that the ideas that were typified by the Hungarian Revolution will take place and explode again?
Other satellites?
Yes, and other satellites.
And Poland and Hungary and others? I think so, yes. And I would have, for my part, through some area, a method of giving these people aid, just as we gave resistance aid during World War II. And I think that should be done. I think they should be aided in every way. I just came back from Vienna and visiting the Hungarian-Austrian border, and I've seen how they've sealed that thing off there and the way they're murdering people today in Hungary. It's brutal. And then people talk about sitting down and talking with the communists. They're murdering people there today, day after day. And what they did with people who were escaping from Hungary last year isn't fit to be put in print unless you want to get the horrors.
You have your answers, Craig.
Yes. Right. Thank you very much, Congressman.
Thank you, Craig.
Our next guest is Mr. Albert G. Nemeth. Mr. Nemeth is a lawyer from Merrick, Long Island, where he's lived all his life. He's a captain of the Air Force Reserve, a graduate of Cornell and Cornell Law School, single, and one time played pro ball in a Brooklyn Dodgers farm team. Go ahead, Mr. Nemeth, if you will.
Congressman, I have a question concerning your new proposal on the REC, which is the Rural Electrification Commission. And I understand that you propose that there is a change in the interest rate that loans are made to the REC. And I'm a little confused. I think you might have an idea concerning the budget and all the money that's going in missiles. Maybe this is part of your plan in putting in this new bill to change the interest rate. Could you explain that to me?
Well, Al, that's a very good question, because of the talk that's going on today and has been going on of the added dollars and billions needed for missiles, research, development, otherwise. I put in that legislation that has a great deal of support, because the Rural Electrification Administration, while I want to do nothing to tear it down, I do feel they should have to pay the interest on the money they borrow from the government. They owe hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, pay the going rate of interest. In other words, the law says that the REA borrows money from the government at 2%. Now, who is that money? The government has to borrow the money, and the going rate today is about 3.25%. Well, that means that the taxpayers here in New York, again coming to this grants and aid business, the taxpayers in New York and all over the country are paying for the lower rates of electricity in those areas while we're paying the extra interest charge. And that amounts to, in the REA alone, of about $35 million a year.
The interest.
The interest, the difference that we're paying.
Carry on, sir.
Now, I want to go one step further, if you don't mind. This also affects the Tennessee Valley Authority. Now, we know it's there. It's got to function. But the Tennessee Valley Authority owes the federal government, meaning the taxpayers, $1.5 billion, on which they pay no interest. Therefore, lower electric rates in that area, but who's paying the interest of 3 to 3.25% today? The taxpayers of the entire country, and it's costing the taxpayers $100 to $150 million a year just for the interest on that money. I think that it's only reasonable, any listener here in New York or anywhere, that they just pay the going interest rate. I'm willing to help them. I don't want to save them.
I'd like to ask you another question, Congressman, and this is concerning the effect that this might have on businesses here and the relocation of business. There's some problem there, too, isn't there?
Well, of course, the gentleman here before was talking about labor and the need of bringing business into Long Island. But at the same time, some of the people are subscribing to the TVA, these low or no interest rates in REA, but the business moving down from New England. You've had business from New York and Jersey moving down the Tennessee Valley area because of the low rates. TVA pays no taxes to the government, no taxes on the property, no taxes on anything. But we're paying the money from here. How are we going to keep business in this area if we're going to have that kind of government-supported competition?
I see.
That take care of your question?
I think that handles it pretty well, thanks.
All right.
How is a young fellow like, handsome fellow like this remain single, old Ben? Tell me.
Well, because he learned about life at the Brooklyn Dodgers.
Is the answer.
Okay. He's lost some value.
Albert Niemann. We have time for one more guest, and it is Miss Sally Robert. Sally is a senior student at the same school from which Craig Scott came a moment earlier. Is that right? Nepham High School?
That's right.
Long Island.
Well,
how old are you, Sally?
I'm 16.
16. She is in the accelerated curriculum at Nepham. Accelerated, that means better than average student?
Well, sort of advanced. We have a little more work to do. We go into things a little more deeply.
I see. A member of the National Honor Society and the International Relations Club. Now, you go right ahead. Here's your congressman. When you can vote, here's your congressman.
Mr. Congressman, President Eisenhower stated that NATO was meeting, and I quote, to consider new elements in the challenge we now face. We shall meet it in unity, unquote. Do you believe that a true spirit of unity was established at this conference?
I would say yes in the overall picture, because all of those people of the NATO countries are our friends. They're our friends. They're our allies. I would say that, that President Eisenhower at this conference accomplished more than I believed was possible after I had left my parliamentarians' meetings in Paris in the early part of November, 11th or 16th of November. Might I just add this question?
Sure.
You know, you must study in history that in the First World War, Woodrow Wilson had two supporters to depend on. Remember, Clemenceau and Lloyd George, two great men. You come to World War II, there was Roosevelt and Churchill, magnificent, brilliant Churchill. You come to the Korean War, and before that, you still had Truman. You still had Churchill. Brilliance. Eisenhower today, the one man in this world, is trying to carry this burden. One man trying to get the understanding and the unity of the American people to understand that problem. He is alone. And I think the American people, in every element, in every phase of it, should be supporting Eisenhower, because for 5 years, no wars. No country's gone behind the Iron Curtain. No people gone behind the Iron Curtain. The mother's son is not praying their sons are not going into war tomorrow. He's done a magnificent job, in my opinion.
Thank you. One of the major U.S. proposals was to place missile bases and stockpiles of nuclear warheads in NATO member countries. Great Britain has approved this plan, becoming the first to do so. What do you think will be the final decision of the other member countries to this proposal?
I think the final decision will be that they will take them.
I think
that the answers that are made public now are merely for the purpose, or rather for the fact, that all of these missiles are not ready. But when they're ready, I'm sure you'll find them there, just as the world found out that we have sack bases in some 52 countries today.
Well, in order to back up the United States proposals, Secretary of Defense McElroy has said that additional funds will have to be appropriated for the next fiscal year. Would you support a request for such an appropriation?
I will support. I support them this year in this Congress. And our opposition party to the administration cut down the Defense Department appropriation this year. I've always supported the greatest defense this country can have. I have for all of my adult life.
Well, what do you think will be the general reaction of Congress to such a request?
I think the general reaction will have to be that they will support it. But I also say there's another area. We should also cut down on expenditures where they're not needed. And not Congress always keep new programs and new appropriations, keeping us into an area of spending that isn't necessary. I think we can save billions on present spending, and that billions plus anything else that's necessary for research and development of missiles or anything for national defense, we should spend it.
Well, there's been a new trend of thought recently concerning NATO, and that involves extending the NATO organization to cover economic, social, political, psychological, and other fields. What do you think would be the value of extending the organization to cover areas other than those in the military?
Well, as a matter of fact, at our NATO parliamentary conference the last 3 years, we've been discussing that, and at this summit meeting that President Eisenhower just attended, much of the material was discussed at the summit meeting that we have been discussing the past 3 years. There should be economic discussions. There should be scientific, technical discussions. We shouldn't be trying to use scientists here to make a certain type of missile, and Britain at the same time, and everybody covering the same field and duplicating. We've got to get together in these countries where we can all save ourselves a whole lot faster and better. And by uniting in those fields and discussing those things, we'll all improve and better ourselves without anybody having to give up any of their sovereignty.
Well, Ludwell Denny, a writer for the New York World Telegram and Sun, has said, and I quote, "With few exceptions, including Britain, Canada, and Turkey, NATO members think the United States should fight for them, but recognize no obligation to fight for us if we are attacked and they are not." Do you think this is a true statement?
No, I cannot conceive of it as being a true statement at all. Because if we are attacked and defeated, certainly there's no living for them. I mean, that is a one thing certain. I can't conceive that at all, no. I'm certain that Britain would fight with us tomorrow. I'm certain West Germany would, to their ability with what means they've got. Italy, Turkey, Greece, I could go on with those countries. There's no doubt in my mind.
Well,
Sally,
yes?
I'm afraid that's all the time we have.
Oh, all right.
I'm sorry, Sally.
Thank you very much.
I'm glad you had a good full 5 minutes with your congressman. And I think it's thrilling that you have this intense and genuine interest in what you're discussing with the Congress. Thank you, Sally.
I might say, Ben, we can have this home in the office there if they want it sometime. I'd be glad to do it with them.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Congressman Becker. Our time is up. I want to extend thanks to you for joining us, and it's really been a pleasure and of very real value to us and particularly to your constituents to have you.
Thank you, sir.
Congressman Frank J. Becker, may I express our thanks not only to Congressman Becker, to all of our citizen guests who appeared in the program Ask Congress. And before we say goodbye, a reminder that in this Christmas season, we of Ask Congress send our Christmas greetings to you, and these come from myself and from all our staff. And the post office has asked me to remind you that if you haven't sent your Christmas cards and packages, do send them today. This is the last chance for delivery. Send them today if they're within over 250 miles, the destination, send them by airmail. Now, anyone listening to my words has an opportunity to appear on this program and Ask Congress. Our next congressional guest on Ask Congress will be Representative Emanuel Seller, a Democrat of the 11th Congressional District, which is in Brooklyn and Queens. If you're interested in participating in these programs to get answers to questions you would like to put to your congressman, simply write to us, address your cards or letters to Ask Congress, WRCA-TV, at Box 391, New York, 19, New York. I'll repeat that address. It's Box 39, WRCA-TV, Ask Congress, WRCA-TV, Box 391, New York, 19, New York. Please make sure to include the name of your congressman and give us an idea of the area in which you feel particularly qualified to ask questions. Ask Congress is presented by the WRCA Special Events Department every second Sunday. Next week at this time, you'll hear another discussion on the program The Open Mind. The topic will be America's Image of Itself. That's next week at this time, and 2 weeks from today, Ask Congress again. We hope you'll join us for all of these programs. Until then, this is Ben Grauer bidding you good afternoon.
Ask Congress is produced by Bill Osterhaus. Executive producer, Al Perlmutter. Directed by Marshall Stone. Technical director, Frank DiRienzo. Unit supervisor, Dick French. Ask Congress is presented by the WRCA Special Events Department. This is Vic Roby speaking.
See a special Christmas performance of the Bells of St. Mary's tonight at 10:30.